Hear that? Money. The uproot of all evil. Permit us to explain.
Columbia presents Corwin. Tonight, Norman Corwin brings you as the 20th program in a limited series, his production of A Pitch to Reluctant Buyers, the work of two young servicemen, Robert E. Lee and Jerome Lawrence. Martin Gable, noted actor of radio and stage, is starred as narrator. Music is by Alexander Semler. A Pitch to Reluctant Buyers.
Now then, about that silver lining in your pocket, commonly known as change, and whatever paper dollars out of hopeful green stuff woven you may call your own. What, if we may ask, are they doing later? You need an answer now, we'll pass the plate in 27 minutes. This program is more or less a bond pitch to reluctant buyers. The bonds, of course, being those which tie us to the trigger, certifying that we really care who's shooting whom, with what, and why. Do take a look first at these specimens of bonds before we put them in the safe to cure. See? Lettered and numbered like the fighting ranks. Green, crisp, and promissory as a worker on his first day at the job. Yet tender, in a way, will yield. In fact, on short acquaintance. Foresighted, too. Can tell you 10 full years ahead what to expect. So, now we begin. One purchase of a 10-cent savings stamp entitles you to 16 bars of music, and the offer is a bargain. Three tunes in one, all patriotic. Keep your poster on the score at all times, and the tootie is a beauty. Are there any takers? Ah, thank you, thank you. Play, gentlemen, as stated in the offer. Plate specials here dispensed in combination with the noted cause are of a stuff apart. Neither case of scotch, nor stocking of domestic silk, nor dancing lessons free with every $1,000 bond. The kiss from Marlene Dietrich, the electric toaster, the shrapnel souvenir from El Guitar were auctioned long ago. We cannot barter double feature previews or sword from corpse of Honorable Jap. No. None of these. But other premiums. Delayed dispatches from high mountain fastnesses. Meetings that never have taken place, but that could have. Or that should have. News traveling up from undergrounds on frequencies too high for wireless or telegraph. Altogether, we offer a varied program here tonight. Thousands in the cast. Took 5 years to make and isn't finished yet. Admission price, one war bond. So, poise your pens and listen. Act One. Scene, Wilhelmstrasse. A conference has been called of the Reich's keenest military minds. Trouble on four fronts. Important meeting. All right, call them together. Let's see what's to be done.
Colonel General Ludwig Beck.
Not here? He'll probably arrive shortly.
Marshal Walter von Brauchitsch.
A marshal of the German army late to a staff meeting? Unforgivable.
Marshal Fedor von Bock!
The hero of Stalingrad? Absent? Can we go on?
Marshal Gerd von Rundstedt!
How can a decision be made without his counsel? The man who made the West Wall impregnable.
Field Marshal Albert Kesselring, General von Kluge, Colonel Count Hanschenk von Stauffenberg.
Their places vacant too.
Marshal von Leib, Marshal Fritz von Manstein, Marshal Ewald von Kleist.
Is there no one remaining to aid the Führer in his hour of greatest need?
Heinrich Himmler!
Heil Hitler.
One man is loyal. The commander of the elite guard. The wearer of the sacred order of the Gestapo. The knight of the bloodbath. The hero of the battle of the ghetto cellar.
Heil Hitler?
Sir. What strategy do you suggest in this crisis?
Death to all traitors, as our glorious Führer states. He who is not for me is against me. Kill every man who opposes the will of the Führer.
Sound, very sound indeed. One more question, Herr Himmler. On the outskirts of the village of Gusky in Normandy, a private from Grosse Pointe, Michigan, is approaching a German pillbox with an apparatus known as a bazooka, manufactured in Hartford, Connecticut, out of war bonds bought in Seattle, Washington.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. The gun is loaded. The men in the pillbox are without ammunition.
Uh-huh.
Supply and communication lines have been cut by Allied artillery. They can't withdraw because every approach to the pillbox is commanded by Allied firepower. Now, what tactics would you suggest in this situation, Herr Himmler?
Heil Hitler!
Transportation item. It's confidentially reported that at 3:55 this morning, 143 tons of wolfram, heading north-northeast across the Pyrenees, suddenly stopped, shrugged, and wondered which way to go. Musical footnote. It's said in high official grapevine circles that this evening, at a special command performance of the stirring Sibelius work Finlandia, a performance ordered by the Baron Mannerheim, three American-made oboes went sour. Industrial news. Our Far Eastern operative reports that an old Essex and two Willie's Knights escaped from a junk pile outside Tokyo today. Rumor has it that a warning's been issued to all old Essexes and Willie's Knights not to endanger needlessly their steel contents until the hour of liberation. Delayed press dispatch concerning the Fourth Estate. In a cemetery just outside the city of Paris, the ghost of a newspaper publisher smiled. This was a different sort of newspaper publisher. He had no pouch, no paunch, and no vested interest. His circulation was omitted from last year's audit bureau of circulations. His paper was not purchasable at the corner newsstand. The price for reading it was sometimes much more than a nickel. The masthead read, Humanity. It was published in a Paris cellar right under the mustache of Pierre Laval. You know what it said. You know what it fought for. Any member of the French underground in good standing would tell you.
His name was Gabriel Péri. He was not a well man. When the Nazi came to Paris, it was as another sickness to him. A sickness more malignant than that of his own body. He was a writer. Therefore, he must write. Every day the people of France read it. And every day it gave hope and life to us. It was almost a miracle how the newspaper grew in strength while its editor coughed his life away. Many things were said and done before they found out. They locked the tired Gabriel Perry in a prison. His tuberculosis grew steadily worse through the waiting days.
Mitkommen.
You know what happened? The last words of Gabriel Perry in L'Humanité were...
Je vais préparer tout à l'heure les lendemains qui chantent.
Je vais préparer tout à l'heure les lendemains qui chantent.
Je vais préparer tout à l'heure les lendemains qui chantent.
Je vais préparer tout à l'heure les lendemains qui chantent.
Je vais préparer tout à l'heure les lendemains qui chantent.
Gabriel Perry would have given all that he knew and owned on this earth to have been able to report in his newspaper the liberation of Cherbourg, the fall of Caen. And it would have been worth all the years of suffering if he could have celebrated Bastille Day 1944, standing on the free brown beaches of Normandy. But wait a minute. Who says he didn't? Who says he wasn't there when the first landing barges slid onto French soil? Is it corny to suppose that? Old hat? Well, love is old hat, too. The death of heroes is a cliché, if you want to look at it that way. We'll look at it another way. Gabriel Perry was very present, very accounted for on the early morning of June 6, 1944. D-Day didn't just happen because General Eisenhower said, "Let's go." It happened because a child starved in Warsaw. The child was one of 60,000 Jewish starvation cases reported as a small item on page 23 of the morning newspaper, right next to the adventures of Little Abner and Daisy May. It happened because a town died in Czechoslovakia. This was fittingly commemorated by a number of broadcasts. It happened because a church was smashed in Germany. Well, the internal affairs of Germany were Germany's business. After all, Hitler was still a good customer. It happened because a man sold his country on the telephone. Body, soul, and railroad lines. Just like a pre-war B picture, wasn't it? It happened because an old woman was told what she could and could not say to her gods. Well, religious intolerance has been going on for a long time. Catholics and Jews have been persecuted before. What difference does another one make? Gentlemen, it made this difference. 56 days ago, the inevitable consequence of all these events were poured into the great funnel of one beachhead. Enough was enough! Even the fascists themselves cannot stomach each other, as the chief amongst them must have realized when he read the handwriting on a mine-shattered wall of a map room a week or so ago. Apparently, the Führer does not yet know how to die. Perhaps it's high time he learned. Perhaps he might take some lessons from those who have. Not from an humble nobody like Gabriel Perry, but from a teacher of indisputably pure blood and high rank, as, for example, the Japanese general who slit his abdomen in Manila when Bataan wouldn't throw in the towel. Perhaps Hitler might learn the fine art of dying from his Nazi friend, Ernst Röhm, who was murdered in bed under indescribable circumstances. Or he might take coaching from the late Count Ciano. You remember the Count, strutting through 10 years of newsreels. Fine camera study, with broad shoulders, thick neck, black shirt, and the determination to live like a lion. Senior the Count met his firing squad proudly, dying the death of a true fascist. Strapped by force astride a kitchen chair, whimpering,
"Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia!"
What a bunch of punks, really. What a model for the home fascists. The Christian fronters, the anti-Semites, the professional race haters, the newspaper editors who admired from various distances the efficiency of Mussolini, who made the trains run on time and who said,
"We cannot foresee a fascist Europe! The whole century belongs to us! Only God can bend the fascist will! Men and things can never do it!"
What a pack of bores and low-grade liars to hitch a wagon to. Hitler, the mystic, the intuitive genius, the great ward of providence, the man who said,
"No power on earth shall push us away from Stalingrad!"
From Stalingrad? Ah, from Minsk, Pinsk, and Dvinsk. And who did the pushing? Why, the annihilated Red Army, of which the darling of Berchtesgaden said,
"We have inflicted on the armies of the Soviet Union the greatest catastrophe in military history."
Oh, well. Literary item. American book publishers who are short on paper stock may be interested in this note from Norway. There's a great quantity of unused book paper stacked in the front yard of a house in Grimstad, Norway. Any member in good standing of the Norwegian underground would be glad to tell you how it got there.
For years, we in Norway had loved the books of Knut Hamsun. We had laughed and cried at them, placed them on our bookshelves next to our Bibles. When we heard that he had taken up with the Gestapo, we decided our houses needed cleaning. We don't burn books. We're not that sort of people. We of Norway merely mailed them back to the author by the thousands. Here at Grimstad, he helped the post office deliver them. He carted the books to his house, dumped them on the lawn, piled them at his doorstep. There are no longer any Hamsun books in Norway, except at that big, white, lonely house. We have sent him home to roost.
Children's Corner. In Yugoslavia, not far from Sarajevo, a slim Serbian boy yesterday celebrated his 14th birthday.
David! David!
Yeah?
Come here! Come here! Come here!
I'm coming.
Now, David, this is for you.
You mean it belongs to me?
Yes, that's what I said. Now look. It takes a clip of 8 shells. When you load it,
I know. Let me show you. Push the clips into place.
Right.
Close the bolt.
Right.
Then...
Be careful, David. David, what are you doing?
Why should I be careful? If that jingle had been a German then, now he would need a new one. The Nazi, he's the one to be careful.
Any Yugoslav partisan in good standing could tell you...
The 14th birthday is a very important one in Yugoslavia. For a man has to be 14 before he can serve as a regular under Marshal Tito.
Here and there in the theater, through Bern, Switzerland, comes word that the celebrated French actor-director Michel Vitray today announced his plan to organize a new French theater. Monsieur Vitray is one of the few French actors who's been active in the Paris theater during the past 4 years.
Monsieur Vitray?
Yes?
I have Monsieur Besançon on the telephone for you now.
Well, thank you. Hello, Jacques.
What is it you want?
You've heard about my idea for a new theater group here in Paris, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, I want you to join me. We are going to do a type of material that... That's more to your liking, Jack. You know, I have a feeling somehow that the German cycle in a theater here is just about washed up.
Clever of you.
You know how I am, Jack. I have a feeling for these trends.
Yes.
Are you with me, Jack? You can see I have a whole new outlook.
Monsieur Vitray, a Frenchman does not change his convictions the way he changes his underwear.
Oh, come now, Jacques. An intelligent man knows how to move with the times. We need you. How about it? Jacques. Jacques, hello, Jacques?
Political chit-chat. In Chicago, a prominent military analyst and observer of world affairs reports that he's received advices from Russia which lead him to believe that this country must be extremely cautious in its post-war relationships with the Soviet Union. Also in Chicago, a Miss Alice Nielsen has received advices from Russia which lead her to somewhat different conclusions regarding post-war relationships with the Soviet Union. Miss Nielsen's advices arrived in a plain white envelope whose return address read,
Tank Officer Katonov, Stalingrad, USSR.
And the letter recently received read as follows.
Dear Miss Nielsen, I received your gift and letter, in which you expressed the hope that what you sent would prove convenient and warm. Yes, your gifts are warm, and they warm us especially because we appreciate your thoughtfulness. I am spending my second year in active service in the Army. I am 26. I await impatiently the moment when I will be competing with American soldiers in destroying the largest number of Nazis. I hope that after the war, you accomplish your desire to visit our country. And I will be happy to meet you and shake your hand warmly. My best soldier's greetings.
Perhaps the prominent military analyst and observer of world affairs in Chicago might receive less negative advices from the Soviet Union if he'd taken the trouble to knit a sweater for a man who was making a last-ditch stand for democracy at Stalingrad 2 winters ago. Delayed dispatch from the underground of an occupied country in Europe. Let's assume right now that we have a portable microphone in our hand, and we're walking down a street in the village of Zemos in northern Greece. This is a beautiful little town, Zemos. It's located high in the mountains north of Athens and can be reached only by one steep, winding road. That's why news takes so long to reach here. Because here, patriots barricaded the road from Athens, cut themselves off from their conquerors. It's very quiet here. I'm quite conscious of the sound of my own footsteps. Doesn't seem to be any sign of life down the entire length of this street. Let me see. This is the Avenue of the Happy Vintner. A winemaker, you might say. It's a very old street. One of the oldest in Zemos. I believe this used to be a very famous mountain resort of the ancients of Athens. A sort of, Saratoga Springs or Lake Arrowhead, where the tired greats of old Greece came to spend their vacations. Perhaps Ulysses once walked down this very street on his way home to a 7-course dinner. Xantippe probably shopped hereabouts for the Socrates family. Aristotle undoubtedly passed this way, having consumed enough calories to remain conscious for hours at a time. Just a moment. I think something's moving out of that alley up ahead. Hello, dog. Hiya, Pooch. Are you dreaming of the days when there were bones in Greece? According to Baedeker, this street is noted for its shops and markets, where one can buy the finest delicacies in all Greece. But more recent statistics indicate that 9 out of every 10 babies born here die of malnutrition their first month of life. The quiet and the emptiness are almost oppressive. Listen. Listen closely to the sound of hunger. The sun's been up an hour here in Zemos. Looks like another beautiful day, if you consider only the weather. There comes an old fellow in a hurry.
Nea, echo! Pali Nea!
Τρέχει.
Οι Αμερικανοί και οι Άγγλοι είναι στη Γαλλία.
Δεν μπορώ να το πιστέψω.
Αλήθεια, αλήθεια είναι.
Οι Αμερικανοί και οι Άγγλοι είναι στη Γαλλία.
Είναι στη Γαλλία. Είναι στη Γαλλία. Είναι στη Γαλλία. Είναι στη Γαλλία.
Wonder where these hungry people get such energy. Sometimes one scrap of news through the underground is a banquet. Sometimes there's food which can't be measured in calories. These patriots, barricaded from the world, have just learned what happened 56 days ago on a patch of beach in Normandy. For there's one word that's worth a month's groceries in every language of Festung Europa. Liberation! Is there a reluctant buyer in the house? You've been told how many bullets a war bond buys, how far a fortress can fly on the fuel of war stamps. But is that old hat, or unromantic? Are you still reluctant? Well, how'd you like to treat a kid in Zemos to a slice of bread? How'd you like to buy a flower for the grave of Gabriel Perry? How'd you like to pay the postage on a book to Norway? How'd you like to buy some slingshots for the little Davids of Yugoslavia? Reluctant, did you say? How'd you like to invest some dough for the good of your conscience in the making of tomorrow?
You have been listening to Martin Gable in A Pitch to Reluctant Buyers, written by Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee, and directed and produced by Norman Corwin as the 20th program in his current series for CBS. Others in the cast were Paul Mann, Kiveli Aliki, Mitzi Gould, Michael Ingram, Kermit Murdoch, Hester Sondergaard, Herbert Berghoff, Theo Getz, Liesl Falke, Jackie Ayers, Nick Dennis, and Mary Cummings. Music was by Alexander Semler. Next week at this time, Columbia presents the 21st of this special limited series, a program written especially by Norman Corwin for one of radio's most brilliant acting talents, Minerva Pius. Miss Pius will star in Corwin's production of A Very Fine Type Girl. Harry Marble speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WBNS, Columbus.